You are listening to Adventures in Buddhism. I'm your host, Morris Sullivan. Well, it's been quite a while since I uploaded a new episode. For those of you who haven't met me in person, I moved recently from the extreme southeastern United States to New England, about 1,000 miles away or more, which is up in the Northeast. And preparing for this move, making it, setting up, and getting functional again, it took quite a bit of time. But I'm back. I'll be posting new episodes pretty regularly now. I also plan to revisit my other podcast, which I haven't done anything with in quite a while, Holding Up the Heavens. That one is only available on Spotify. That's because of its format. It's music plus talk, so basically it functions something like a big playlist with songs interspersed with spoken word. It's very cool, though. I explore the intersection between spirituality and music. So if you haven't listened, I hope you'll check that one out, too. If you have a Spotify premium account, you get the songs in their entirety. Otherwise, you just get samples. But you can go back and listen to the ones you like later if you want. Well, anyway, I'll be returning to the usual format with this one. I'll tell you a story from the Buddhist literature, and then I'll share you a talk I gave somewhere. I have a backlog of talks that I recorded before I started getting ready to move. And by the time I work my way through all of that, I'll be giving some online talks. I have no plans to be teaching anywhere in person anytime soon, but as I get to know the area where I live now, that might change. Well, in this episode, I'll share with you a talk that I gave on Buddhism and religious tolerance. It happens that I'm producing this episode the first week of January. And as I'm sure you're aware, a lot of people cut down on their food intake this time of year, either to recover from holiday overindulging or just to improve their health. If you're one of those people, like I am, by the way, then I offer you this little story as inspiration for healthier eating. The Buddha was staying at a monastery that had been built by King Pasenadi, who was a devout Buddhist himself. One day the king came to visit the Buddha, and he had just eaten a whole bucketful of food. So when he arrived at the monastery, he was so stuffed that he could barely breathe. Seeing this, the Buddha recited this verse: "When one is constantly mindful and knows when they have taken enough food, their afflictions all become slimmer. They age more gradually, thus protecting their lives." Well, there was a young Brahmin named Sudassana who had also come to visit the Buddha and was standing nearby. And King Pasenadi called him over and said, "My dear Sudassana, would you thoroughly memorize that verse and come with me and recite it whenever food is brought to me? If you'll do that, I'll set up a permanent daily offering to support you." Well, that was a pretty good deal. Brahmins didn't have support come that easily very often, so he readily agreed to this arrangement. And so every meal, he recited this verse: "When one is constantly mindful and knows when they have taken enough food, their afflictions all become slimmer. They age more gradually, thus protecting their lives." As a result of this, the king developed a habit of eating no more than a cupful of rice at each meal, not a bucketful. And by the time the Buddha returned to the monastery, King Pasenadi had become quite slender. King Pasenadi noted that his health was better, he was no longer uncomfortable from overeating, and he had learned a valuable spiritual lesson. "Indeed, the Buddha has shown me compassion in two ways," he said. "Compassion for my welfare here and now, and also for my future in this life and beyond." I'm glad there's some new people here. What I'm going to talk about today actually is comes up in questions a lot with people who have just started practicing Buddhism and actually decided to talk about it after I was kind of looking through some stuff, and I came across this quote that has to do with Buddhism in the context of society, a multi-faith society, a society with multiple religions in it. "One should not honor only one's religion and condemn the religions of others, but should honor others' religion for this or that reason. In so doing, one helps one's own religion to grow and renders service to the religions of others too. In acting otherwise, one digs the grave of one's own religion and also harms the other religions." So I'll kind of come back to that a little bit. But this quote was from Asoka, or Ashoka, depending on what Indian dialect you're talking. And he was a great ruler in India. And I'll tell you a little bit more about him in a couple of minutes. But, you know, Buddhism and other religions have always coexisted. The man who became the Buddha was born in India about 2,600 years ago, and there were already teachers and teachings and religious traditions in place. There were others that kind of came up around the same time as Buddhism, Jainism, more or less, around the same time. And there were yogis, and there was the Brahmanic tradition with, you know, observing certain scriptural traditions and that sort of stuff. And so it's always had, you know, found a place within this larger religious context. And Buddhism tends to be tolerant of other religions. I don't like that word tolerant. I mean, it kind of implies that, well, my religion's good, but I'll be okay with yours too. And it's not like that. It's more of a sort of cohabitation with other religious traditions. And so I thought I would talk about that a little bit, because a lot of times people will come to me who started practicing Buddhism, and their friends or their family have a lot of questions, and sometimes maybe even some hostility toward their new practice. Or the other thing is that they'll be exploring multiple religions, and Buddhism will be the one that, you know, seems most resonant, but they'll also wonder, well, what about Taoism? There's some cool stuff about Taoism and Hinduism and, you know, all these kinds of things. And so you start to notice wisdom in other religious traditions too. And so how does all that fit together? Does it all fit together? If I'm a Buddhist, do I have to only be a Buddhist? Or can I, you know, can I also work with Hindu ideas or things like that? I thought I would talk a little bit about that, sort of working within that context. Now, let me point out, I think Buddhism is the best religion. If I thought some other religion was better than Buddhism, I would practice that religion. But I like Buddhism. But when I say it's the best religion, I mean it's the best religion for me. I can't know if it's the best religion for you. You have to figure that out. One can't say for sure that one religion is good and another is bad. It kind of, you know, it sort of depends. Who are you talking to? Where are they coming from? What's the context of their life? What is it that they need spiritually? And how are they going to access the divine? All those things come into play differently with different people. And there are people who will do that, who will say, no, my religion is the only good one. But those people's minds are clouded by dogma. You know, it's really not rational to think that. I was talking about this Wednesday night on my YouTube broadcast, and somebody posted in the chat, you know, that a particular phrase, which we just recited not too long ago, gave them a lot of inspiration around that. The phrase comes from the Metta Sutra. It said, by not holding to fixed views, the pure-hearted one, having clarity of vision, being freed from all sense desires, is not born again into this world. So part of awakening, part of enlightenment, part of spiritual freedom is to not even be fixed in your views of religion. That doesn't mean that you don't need anything or that you shouldn't believe anything or whatever. I mean, that'd be like sort of the raft just sort of floating down the stream without a pilot, right? To get across the river, you need some guidance. But there are some things that are pretty unique about Buddhism in this respect. Among them is the idea of religion as a practice, not as a belief system. In fact, a lot of times people will come to me and say, well, I'm a Buddhist, but I don't really think of Buddhism as a religion. It's more things you do. And I agree. Some religions are about orthodoxy. Here's the stuff you believe. And some religions, like Buddhism, are more orthopraxy. Here's the things you do. So another is that Buddhism has traditionally, to a large extent, been pretty friendly toward other religions. And this is true of some other religions too. And it's not, historically hasn't always been the case. There are situations now, like some of you I'm sure are aware of what's gone on in Myanmar for the last couple of decades between Buddhism and Islam and that sort of thing. But that's not
common. So the Buddha didn't mind confronting other religious teachers and teachings. He didn't mind pointing out how there was a better way to think or a better way to practice. But he was always friendly and respectful. And so a lot of the time you'll see discourses where he's talking to a Brahmin. A Brahmin was a priest in the early traditions, and still are today. And he would be respectful to them as Brahmins. But, you know, if somebody was promoting an idea that he didn't think really held water, he would point that out. Well, so Asoka actually, in a sort of the society context, played a big part in making Buddhism tolerant and at times even supportive of other religions and teachers. So Asoka, as I said, was a ruler in India. He's often referred to as an emperor. He ruled over a big part of India beginning around 265 BCE. So about 200 or 250 years after the Buddha's death is when he came along. He ruled this one country, but in 262 BC, he conquered the neighboring country. And apparently it was very bloody. Lots of people died, atrocities, all those kinds of things. And so he saw the suffering caused by the war directly, but also the suffering that the war caused afterward, with displaced families and people having to deal with, you know, lost loved ones and all of that kind of stuff. And this recognizing this suffering actually caused a change in his personality. So he had already considered himself a Buddhist, and there are some early writings where he talks about Buddhism, but he seemed to be not too committed to it. You know, kind of the way a lot of people talk about their religion, you know, something they're born into, but not really thinking about it too much, right? But he decided after he saw all this suffering that he was going to dedicate his life to applying Buddhist principles to running his empire. And so he would explain the Dharma. He would describe it as doing little evil, doing much good, kindness, generosity, truthfulness, and purity. So those are the principles that he decided to apply to managing his realm. Can you imagine that? Doing good, not doing evil, kindness, generosity, truthfulness, and purity. What would America be like if leadership applied that? Anyway, so he established his empire based on this idea, and actually he sort of implemented this plan that he called conquering through the Dharma rather than conquering through military conquests and that sort of thing. He built Buddhist monuments and things like that, but he adopted a policy of religious freedom and encouraged followers of other religions. The way he put it was to increase their worthiness. In other words, make your religion better. Now, how do you make your religion better? Live better lives, right? I mean, if you wanted to show someone Buddhism is the best religion, what would you do? Be the best person you could be. So if you wanted to improve the quality of religion, well, make the people better. So he'd go out to give talks about the Dharma to people in rural villages and things like that. And while he was doing that, he would identify people who were suffering, and he'd look after their needs. He established this sort of order of Dharma ministers. They were people who worked for the government, but their job was to go out and look for needy people in needy situations and see what they could do to alleviate that. He especially focused on women and people in rural communities that were sort of off the beaten path, and people in countries that were, you know, nearby his empire. So not all within his realm, but just nearby it also. He would have trees planted along roadsides to provide shade for travelers, have wells dug so people would have plenty of clean water, created rest houses for people who needed shelter. And he issued edicts encouraging vegetarianism and prohibiting cruelty to animals. He actually founded hospitals for people, but also veterinary hospitals. So he died in 232 BC after reigning for 38 years. And unfortunately, a lot of his initiatives died with him or died out not long afterward. But one of the things he wrote was that he didn't consider glory and fame to be of great account unless they are achieved through, as he put it, having my subjects respect the Dharma and practice the Dharma. And whatever efforts I make are only for the welfare of the people in the next world, and that they will have little evil. One of the things that he did that sort of affects us today is he built monasteries, and he would put these markers at important Buddhist sites, like the pilgrimage sites. And so we know a lot of those exist because he marked them. And he would erect these pillars, these columns, about as tall as the ceiling here, and then at the top would be often a lion. So sometimes the Dharma, the words of the Buddha, are considered the lion's roar. And so there would be a pillar with a lion on top, and that would mark a spot where the lion had roared, where the Dharma had emerged into the world. But he was a fan of religion in general. I mean, he was a devout Buddhist, but he recognized that spiritual teachings had the capacity to help people aspire to something greater than just their ego. And it had the ability to communicate values that help societies function well. So if they were guided by good spiritual values like kindness and harmlessness, that would make everyone live better and be happier. I was thinking about like people that I know who get into arguments with family members or who are, you know, people are critical of them because they're not practicing whatever religion they were raised with and all of that. How do you respond to that? And I think his advice was kind of good. Honor others' religion for this or that reason. In other words, point out what's honorable about this other religion. And he said, in so doing, one helps one's own religion to grow and render service to the religions of others. So, you know, if somebody's a dogmatist who's just convinced that, you know, you're going to hell in a handbasket because you're not practicing whatever they grew up with, you're not going to change their mind. But if you're nice to them, well, maybe that will have some effect over time. So, as I said, Buddhism has tended to coexist with other religions. There's no imperative in Buddhism to convert other people. The Buddha did convert others, and Buddhist missions happen. But the defining principle is this thing called ahipassika. This is a Pali word. And it comes from there's a very traditional Pali chant that if you ever spend any time at a Theravada Buddhist temple, you'll chant this. It's Svakato Bhagavata Dhammo Sanditiko Akaliko Ahipassika Opanayiko Pachatam Vaditva Vinyuti. Which means the Dharma is well expounded by the Blessed One. To be seen here and now, timeless, inviting all to come and see, that's ahipassika, inviting all to come and see, pertinent to be seen by the wise for themselves. So if you're wise and you encounter the Dharma, you will see it for yourself. So ahipassika doesn't mean just figure it out on your own, inviting you to see for yourself. The teachers are important, but because they show you the path so that you can experience it for yourself, not so they can tell you what to think. So Buddhism, the big difference between Buddhism and a lot of other traditions, that it's not dogma and dictum. It's not, we're not told what to believe and what we have to do. It's doctrine and discipline. There's a body of teachings that embody principles and practices by which we can live compassionately and develop wisdom. I get questions from people trying to practice Buddhism along with another religion, as I said, wanting to reconcile things that are hard to reconcile. And sometimes people will ask me, you know, what do I do with my yoga practice and Buddhism, for example? I mean, that one comes up a lot, you know, or well, I've been reading the Tao Te Ching, and how does that affect my Buddhism and stuff? So my advice, and you don't have to take my advice, but my advice, what works for me, is to find your best path. Whatever your best way forward is, whatever the best path is for you. Even within Buddhism, there are different practices and different schools of thought. And so find the one that works for you, and then dedicate yourself to practicing that. Now, that doesn't mean that you have to be exclusively one thing or another. Oh, I'm a Vietnamese Buddhist. I don't do any of this other stuff or whatever. Because a lot of these traditions draw from other traditions. In fact, the liturgy here, what we just recited, includes stuff from a tantric Buddhist tradition and from Zen and from Pure Land and all of that. And it all kind of works together, and that's okay. That's what you should do with your practice. Find things that work together. So I'm a Zen monk and I'm a Jodo Shinshu minister. And somebody will ask me, what's better, Zazen or saying the Nimbutsu? So Zazen is sitting meditation. The Nimbutsu is saying Namo Amida Butsu or Adita Phat in Vietnamese. So when I answer the question, I say, well, it depends. Am I sitting in Zazen or am I reciting Namo Amida Butsu? They're both good practices and they go to the same place. There are things that are very difficult to reconcile with Buddhist teachings, I would think. You know, the Christian view of a soul or the Hindu view of the Atman. You know, those don't combine too well with the Buddhist view of the not-self characteristic. But that's okay. Work with the practice that works for you, and those things will fall in place. I think it's best to find a solid foundation. So whatever you think makes your foundation. So if you're drawn to Buddhism, practice Buddhism. Do it thoroughly. And then you can be informed by other teachings, but not distracted by them. I listen to good religious teachers of all traditions, and I listen to them as a Buddhist, and I always can come away with something useful in my understanding of the Dharma. Dharma isn't just Buddhist. Dharma is reality. So if someone says something that's grounded in wisdom, grounded in compassion, grounded, as Asoka said, in things like kindness, beneficence, it's going to be wise. It doesn't matter what religious label you put on it. So that's all I have to say. Thank you for your attention.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Adventures in Buddhism. I'll be back soon with another one. In the meantime, I hope that this has helped you in your own practice in some way. Now, go save the world.